Hello and welcome to the Shepherd Walwyn podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Brown. Shepherd Walwyn is a campaigning book publisher based in London, England, whose purpose is to uncover and promote authors with new ideas to society's oldest problems, especially economic ones. Today we continue our exploration of the ideas in Taken for a Ride, Trains, Taxpayers and the Treasury, the second edition, written by Don Riley with help and support by Fred Harrison, Dave Wetzel and yours truly. In this episode, I speak with Fred Harrison, a longtime collaborator with Don, both in his life, but also for the original book, Taken for a Ride. I begin by asking Fred how he got to know Don and how the friendship started.
I was running a think tank in Vauxhall Bridge Road in central London, and one day a guy called Don Riley walked into the office. He lived just around the corner from our office, and he wanted to talk about land values, which, of course, was a subject close to my heart. And it turns out that he was working at the coalface of how land values are actually created and who benefits. He owned a number of commercial properties close to where the British government were tunnelling between Waterloo Station and the new financial district in Canary Wharf. His properties were around several of the stations in Southwark. And he was mystified that as he saw the drilling going on, men going down the tunnels to excavate the soil to create the tunnels, his rents were going up and he could charge more for his tenants. So he went down the tunnel to have a look at the operations beneath the ground. He saw the tunneling going on and he twigged. It was that investment by the taxpayers of Britain that was creating a new service, not just at Waterloo and at Canary Wharf, which is where the financial district was going to be, but also around the stations along the Underground Railway line. He realised that he was benefiting from the investment of taxpayers' money in that underground. And he thought, well, at this rate, all the money that I pay as a taxpayer, I'm going to get back from the government in the form of higher land values that I charge rents for my tenants for. And he thought that this was an injustice. It wasn't fair. It would mean that he wasn't paying his fair whack into the government's coffers for the services he was receiving. And he realized that the public investment in the services provided to taxpayers generated this extra value that was not being shared equally among everybody. It wasn't being shared among all the taxpayers, for instance. So up in the north of England, where people lived in tenanted homes and paid taxes, they were helping to create an investment in London that was pushing up the land values, but they were not getting their share of those benefits. Instead, most of the benefits were being channeled into the pockets of the landowners who owned properties around the stations of the Jubilee line. Well, when Don Riley told me that story, of course, my ears pricked up and I wanted to encourage him to write down the results. And in the end, he mapped out the increase in values around the stations. And it became the book that Shepherd Walwyn is now republishing a second edition of. To me, it's a significant publication because, by and large, people have a false idea of where the value comes from that drives up the price of their homes. They think that when newspapers report that house prices are going up, that this is the result of windfalls or manna from heaven, as if no labor actually went into creating the value which they're somehow pocketing just because of their good fortune. And that psychology is the principal barrier to political change that would enable governments to begin to solve our problems. So people have got to come to terms with the increase in the price of their homes is not the result of a windfall, like striking it lucky in the lottery. It's not manna from heaven. It's the result of a lot of hard labor by somebody, which has been transferred to those who happen to own property rights that gives them the privilege of collecting what is called rent, economic rent in technical jargon, which is the net income above wages and profits in an economy. Now, the significance of the book is that it illustrates with a case study exactly how the value that is collected by residential and commercial properties is formed.
Amazing, amazing. And what was it about Don, do you think, that prompted him to get curious about why his investments were going up, rather than concluding that he must be a genius and some kind of financial wizard?
Well, he was a New Zealander who had got off the boat at Dover and made his way in London through the property market. He was a bit of a free thinker. He was an outsider who had to question everything to prosper, and he did prosper. He ended up creating a theatre in the basement of one of those buildings near one of the Southwark stations. He just didn't think it was fair that he was pocketing money that others had helped to create. And in digging, not literally, but going down the hole and looking at people actually tunneling underground, he decided that this wasn't right, and he was willing to spill the beans. Look, here is why it's so important that people learn this lesson from this book. First of all, it's not just that the land values that accrue around the railway stations are not windfalls. They are the product of a lot of hard labor by the people who pay their taxes to pay for the tunneling so that the trains can run underground. But on top of the injustice of the unfair distribution of the benefits from the railway, he felt that it was wrong, that he was getting back all the taxes he was paying into the exchequer through the back door, as it were. This was money that was being smuggled out, quite lawfully, of course, by the system that was channeling the benefits of that public investment into private pockets, but only for privileged people, the ones who owned the rights to collect that revenue. It's not just immoral, but he felt it was illegal, in a sense, as it were. It was quite lawful, of course. The government was charging people taxes in the way that they do now. But the consequence of that was a discrimination that was unfair to a lot of people. So we ended up doing that book, publishing the first edition of Taken for a Ride. And then he introduced me to a think tank in London, the Institute of Economic Affairs, a free market think tank. And they took up the cause of the need to extend the policy of sharing the rents into the mainstream government policy making. So he was very active as a consequence of the first-hand lesson that he derived from benefiting from an unjust fiscal or financial system.
How surprised, if at all, were you at the success that Don's message had in connecting with quite disparate groups of people all the way across the political spectrum?
Well, it showed what one individual who was concerned enough can achieve. As a result of the publication of the first edition, the London Transport Authority commissioned a number of professional evaluation agencies to do research to confirm his results, and they tracked the increase in land values for up to a mile from each of the stations. The further away the property, the lower the increase as a result of the investment. So they were, his results were authenticated because the Transport for London were driven to commissioning the studies that confirmed Don Riley's story. And in other words, if government needed any reliable evidence to change the way they recover the benefits from the public investments that they commission, the evidence was presented through this book, through the initiatives of Don Riley to start with.
Now, fascinating. And looking at the book today, because it was over 20 years when it first came out, why are the ideas, in your opinion, still relevant today?
Well, today the world is in a worse state than it was 20 years ago. We have a government, because it uses the kind of taxes that it does use, is finding it increasingly difficult to invest in public infrastructure. So that infrastructure is now being systematically debased. We spend less and less on schools, hospitals, the enforcement of law and order, the preparation of our military forces for the defense of the realm. All of this is public funding that is not coming forward because of the kind of tax regime that is employed by governments today. And therefore, the lesson is even more important today than it was when we published the first edition. So the second edition is now reinforced with material from Dave Wetzel. Dave Wetzel at the time was the vice chairman of the Transport for London Transport Authority. He was an advocate of recovering the increased values to be shared amongst everybody. And so we can see that the message of the book is central to the recovery, to the restoration of health, public health, of Britain as a society. So the book's message is even more important now and will become increasingly so because we're on a one-way track, and that's downhill. Lower productivity because of the kind of taxes that are imposed on the working population, less investment, which means the erosion of the vitality of our public institutions, the incompetence of the policymakers, the governments, because they don't know what they're doing, they're chasing their tails. And so we're in a downward spiral, and it can only be ended if enough people become Don Rileys in this world and say, enough really is enough. We have to reverse the process.
And just to be clear, Don was a committed capitalist. And so he wanted to be rewarded fairly for the stuff that he did as an entrepreneur.
He was an entrepreneur and a landlord. And that was what's particularly interesting. He benefited from the values that were generated by the public investments. And yet he was willing to say, on moral moral grounds that this was not right. And he understood that by being a good capitalist, he could make more than adequate profits to live the good life. So much so that, as I said earlier, he created a theatre in the basement of one of his commercial buildings to enrich the community. It's known as a fringe theatre, but this attracted people to theatrical experiences, and Don got paid with rents, and the community benefited. Well, that happens even if the rents of that are created by public investments are collected to expand the investment in what are called public goods. So there a virtuous cycle would be created by recycling those rents that are generated by the public sector. We distinguish here between the rents as they're commonly understood, of course. When you rent an apartment, you're not just paying for the location benefits, you're also paying a landlord who owns the building. Well, the rents that you would ideally be pooling into the public purse do not include the rents of the building. They don't include the rents of hiring a car. So we have to distinguish the two kinds of rents, the rents, the commercial rents that as we understand them today, and what is left, the net income that is generated by society at large, which are the direct results of, well, actually that layer of rents is complex. It's made up of the services provided by nature, the proximity, for instance, of the River Thames adds value to properties along the Thames, but also the proximity to underground railway stations or theatres or hospitals and schools. All those things add value. And it's that layer of rents that ought to be pooled into the public purse. And Don Riley, as a capitalist, as an entrepreneur, understood he would have an even richer life if those rents were pooled into the public purse, and if he was relieved of the bad taxes on the income that he actually earned. So what we're talking about is a transition to a revenue-neutral strategy. As you increase the collection of rents that are created by society, you reduce the taxes on people's earned incomes, so that government continues to sustain its funding of public services, but actually people now have an even greater incentive to work, to produce, to be enterprising, and to realise their ambitions.
Amazing. Amazing. And is there anything else you want to add, Fred, about the significance of the book from a practical point of view?
There is an important consequence of what I've been talking about. The obstacle to government changing its strategy is the attitude of people who don't understand the nature of the rents that they're collecting, which they think are windfalls. As a consequence of that, they resist public investment, for instance, in housing. This has given rise to what is known as NIMBYism, not in my backyard. Homeowners don't want more homes to be built because they think they're going to lose some of the value of their homes. If their homes did indeed go down in value, it wouldn't be the value which they created, but it's a false premise anyway. But the political attitude of the NIMBYs, who don't want a change in the tax regime, is a reason for governments to continue with their present damaging taxes, which actually constrain people from being creative and prevents people from achieving their goals. In addition, to support that negative attitude of current property owners, we have the mass media on the right side of the political spectrum who barrage governments that even dare to think about restructuring the tax system in the way I've described. They then call such a strategy a wealth tax or a garden tax, anything emotive that scares politicians from making the changes that we desperately need. So the significance of Taken for a Ride is that it helps to explain in very human terms and from the words of a landowner himself that this is a good strategy, that instead of being negative about it, we should actually be giving the politicians who are relatively weak in their spines the metal to make the changes that would be good for everybody, including landowners. Everybody would benefit. And so by doing a second edition with the further elaborations that have been added to the book, one hopes that the debate will become informed and governments might be inspired to make sensible decisions on behalf of their constituents.
Well, and as readers will find, the data that's come out from other independent sources since the book was published, and more recently in a 2017 study by Transport for London and KPMG and Savills, it shows unequivocally that public investments in these infrastructure projects, with the conditions that were present for the Jubilee line, they make fabulous investments. And so any conversation that it's bad for the exchequer, it's bad for the public, absolute nonsense, as long as they meet certain criteria, which Don was very clear about in the book. And I know you've taken pains and the team's taken pains to make that clearer. So ladies and gents, get hold of the book. It's a fabulous read. It's one of the things I think it benefits from the fact that Don had to learn this himself and he wasn't naturally an economist. And so his description of all these ideas, which can come across sometimes as theoretical or difficult to understand, he has a wonderful way of describing them in ways that are the easiest to understand, I think I've found, of any of the books that talk about this topic. So, Fred, as always, thanks very much for your time. And we look forward to the continued success of the book.
You're welcome, Jonathan. Thank you very much.
To explore these ideas further, be sure to visit shepherdwalwin.com and join our mailing list for news and special offers,
and also to buy the books. So until next time, keep reading.